Hello again, it's Georgette Rowland here of the Financial Gym, and welcome to the next part of how to keep your business financially fit. And this time we're going to talk about how inflow versus outflow is the key to knowing from where and when you make your money and how it disappears. If you remember in the first two parts, we talked about your motivation and, you know, drilling down to the real reasons why you're doing what you're doing. The second part looked at the planning based on those reasons and what you need to know to get to those dreams and those aims and goals that you have. Now, we're assuming you've got that figured out and money's coming in. You're earning an income, you're making a profit, or you're making a loss, whichever, you know what it is. This bit talks about the actual movement of the money. Now, not to teach you to suck eggs, and I do apologize if you've heard this all before or heard this particular line before, but what money comes in must exceed the money going out. And it's not always about the amount of money, but how that money is timed. You know, to lose weight more effectively, you need to increase your exercise and decrease the amount of food you eat for that to happen. We know that. To build muscle, you need to lift more weights than the targeted part of your body is used to dealing with so that you fatigue that muscle enough to stimulate it into growing. That we know. To be financially fit, you need to bring in more money than you pay out. Though with business finances, as I said, a lot of it is about timing. And if you don't get the timing right, all the profit you're making could be undermined by your efforts in this area or lack of effort in this area. So the basis to put more in and take less out will be what you use to determine how the money that you're left with can help you reach the outcomes you have in mind. Most importantly, you need to have systems. Please don't start yawning and closing your eyes and banging your head on the desk. And I know system is one of the most overused words of the modern business era. But please believe me when I say to you that what systems do is create frameworks to get you from A to B. They're hard to do in the beginning, but at the other end, they really do make your life easier. They make it easier for your staff, your advisors, or your team, effectively. It's easier for them to understand what you're trying to achieve so that they can support you better. It also enables you to do what so many business owners really struggle to do, though it's the thing that would transform their working life, and that is to delegate easier, knowing that the results at the other end remain consistent and of the standard that they expect, so that they're not always being relied upon to do everything. And there are a number of systems that you could employ. I have the six main ones that I tend to think, you know, form the crux of how to create the great systems in your business. One is automating your lead generation. I mean, you need to have a lead generation system anyway, but the more you can automate it to free you up, the better it is, whether it's through your website, social media, referral schemes, affiliate schemes, and so forth. Two, having a really good sales process. You know, one that not only builds on the leads that you've generated, but is consistent, so creates consistent results. It may enable you over time to even hand over elements of it to others to free you up again even more. An obvious one is documenting a script to enable someone else to handle initial inquiries for you. That script may even be that good that it enables that person to not just take the inquiry, but qualify how suitable a prospect they are for your product or service, and then only schedule appointments if appropriate. So it means that you're not wasting time having constant appointments with people who are never going to buy your product. Three, a good buying process, whether you want to call it procurement process, you know, purchasing, apologies, or buying. This is a way to minimize what it costs you to make sales. So the better your buying process, the better the products that you buy in, the more effective they are in helping you create your sales, then of course the better you are at giving customers what they want, getting the money in without sacrificing quality. Four, a good customer fulfillment process, i.e. in many cases, how the things get delivered. The best way to get your product or service to a customer that pleases them, that still makes you profit, and make sure you get paid on time. Which leads me to number five, a robust credit control process. Now, this doesn't have to be comprehensive for all businesses. It really does depend on the nature of what you sell and how your business is run. But you need to make sure that the money you've made and worked so hard to create is not messed up by poor financial controls and communications between you and your customers. And six, you've got all of that sorted. The money's in the bank. How do you manage that money? How do you allocate the money to make sure that it goes to the right place at the right time? And most important of all, that you, the business owner, are being financially rewarded for all your hard work. Because so often we do all the other things, and at the very end, that's the bit that's lacking. You know, how fed up are you at not being able to earn or take the money from the business that you really need, and yet you're working all hours? Now, how good you are at doing these things will show up in your profit and loss reports, your balance sheet, and your cash flow. How, I'll explain in a later time. For now, let us concentrate on how you can influence these processes in your favor so that the reports eventually show you what you would like to see. If you remember in podcast number 2, the foundations and planning, I said that your business was split into 3 main areas: the sales and marketing, the operations, and the financial controls. Lead generation and sales processes are obviously marketing, and there are amazing experts out there who have brilliant systems that you can apply. My only personal input on the subject, obviously not being a marketeer, are 3 main areas really, and they're things that I'm sure most of you have heard before and you know, but it's just really to reinforce it because I think they're so important. And the first one is raise your prices. Particularly, I'm talking to you, the self-employed who work from home, who have very low overheads and can get away with the lower prices. Your costs, despite how low they may be now, will not stay the same year after year after year. If you never raise your prices, you are effectively reducing your ability to be profitable, even if you sell more. But ensure that even if you raise your prices, you are still giving the value to justify these increases. The next one is, no amount of money juggling will save you long term if you're just plain and simply not selling enough. You have no choice but to improve and increase your marketing, and I'm sorry to say it for those that hate it, your selling efforts. And again, for the home businesses, this is often used as an advantage of having low overheads, that, you know, you keep your prices low to be able to compete with the bigger boys who, you know, overheads are much higher. They can't be as price sensitive to a client base as you can. However, this can be disastrous for long-term growth. If you ever need to hire extra help, move premises, you know, now you're going to get offices, invest in equipment because things are moving on and you need better stuff, there may not be enough margin in your pricing to afford these things. If you then decide to raise your prices, the amount you need to raise them by to cover these expenses may be such a jump that even clients who are not price sensitive and would willingly pay more will find that these increases are too steep even for them. A word of warning. While keeping costs and expenses down is a fundamental principle of being profitable, you do not want to do it to the point where it has a negative impact on your business. You know, if you need money, and you've got the truck sitting outside on the forecourt, yes, selling it may bring you in much needed money because they won't extend your overdraft. But if that truck will earn you money when things pick up, will you be in a position to buy another one? So in one fell swoop, you've decreased your ability to earn. In 2011, Ernst & Young did a survey of business leaders, their annual business leader survey, funnily enough. And in it, it declared that cost cutting was seen as the second most dangerous risk to business survival, second only to trying to keep up with regulations and compliance. So basically, the saying is indiscriminate cost cutting just to end up paying less can not just be false economy, it can actually stop you from trading effectively. So, for example, let's use the scenario of your material costs are going through the roof and you find a supplier that can give it to you cheaper. The problem with cheaper is often it's just another word for inferior. Working on that premise, you buy this stock, and on paper, you can see that if all other things remain the same, your profit will increase. But what happens is this stock takes you longer to provide your product, enables you to create your product, or makes it harder for you to provide your service. So what you do is you go and increase manpower to get it out on time. What does this do? Cuts back into your profit. So even though on paper, when you originally bought it, you looked like you were making more, the reality of using it has cut back into your bottom line, so you're making less per sale. This knock-on effect means, in turn, it reduces your customer satisfaction levels, because whereas you used to get everything to them within a day or within a week, it's now taking 2 weeks, or you're getting it to them on time, but the quality is not the same, and your customer base is beginning to notice this. So what does this do? There is a rise in complaints. Customers then start to maybe spend less because they're no longer trusting the quality of what you're giving. Worst scenario, they just go elsewhere. They're now not paying you because it's becoming difficult for them to trust what you're sending. So they're now having constant issues that you need to resolve. They're holding on to payment. Until you sort this out, you're not getting paid. One of the things we end up doing, because it's a quick win to keep the customer, is we refund their money. Because what we're not dealing with are the reasons why it's happening. Well, you've got an inferior product, it's taking you longer, blah, 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 blah. If you're lucky, the customers stay with you. But using the worst scenario, it's sullied your relationship with them. They're no longer just spending less. They've gone elsewhere. So your future money from them is now going down. But you're so busy firefighting, trying to keep hold of the customer, you're not noticing this. And this is, again, is another way that business owners get caught out. Because your balance sheet shows, or your aged debtors list shows, you've got all this money unpaid to come in. And you go, oh, there's money tight in the bank, but I've got all these sales that's money to come in yet. When all that money comes in, I'll have the money I need. But what this false security is not showing you is that the likelihood is you don't have current profit and loss reports being done. And what those profit and loss reports are showing you is your sales over time, since you actually created those original sales that you still haven't got paid for, has been decreasing. So even if you get that money in, the sales that have come from the next stage or the subsequent months are gone down so much, you're going to have a lot less money to play with anyway. And assuming that you don't add the task of chasing money to someone's job, so whereas you didn't have this task before, it usually ends up being you if you're a smaller business, or you take someone off another job and they're now chasing money. The problem with that is, apart from being time consuming, it's really done very well if credit control is not your forte, and it still may result in you not getting your money. So what do? You are now faced with engaging a credit control or debt collection service because your own financial situation is showing so much strain, you are less able to pay your bills. And with decreased sales, the stock that you bought originally is sitting unused in a warehouse or a stockroom somewhere, or as a service business, you've taken on extra staff to cover all this work, and they're twiddling their thumbs. So you're struggling to, one, pay them, and the money that you spent on the stock for our product provider is money that you could be using, and it's tied up in materials. Now, I accept I have painted a bit of an extreme example, and it's unlikely that you would be going through all those things all at the same time. But you'd be really unlucky to go through even two or three of them. I use the word unlucky, as we've seen, it's not luck. I just really wanted to illustrate the knock-on effect of one ill-thought-out decision. To buy or cost-cut effectively, you need to have a plan of action that takes into account what the impact of each buying or non-buying decision will have on the other areas of the business and whether the risk is no risk, low risk, or high risk. This means that you, the owner, need to put your owner head on and not your worker head, because you need to be looking down on your business, to use another overworked phrase, and looking at the individual components, a bit like looking down on, you know, on chess pieces, and move them around accordingly. The difficulty comes because too often the need to cost cut is a reaction to what is already a bad situation for a business owner that is already stretched dealing with day-to-day problems, so much so that spending less money just becomes the aim. How that happens is irrelevant because the owner is desperate to just stop firefighting. The irony, as I said before, is if you strip back too much of your resources, you could leave yourself nothing to fight the fires with, going back to my truck on the forecourt example. If you do, what ends up happening is, and you know how many of us recognize this, you go back to doing the bare minimum as a business, or as is common with sole traders, this has all been too much and a whole lot of hullabaloo for very little reward, you go back to doing things yourself. Then what is it about you, if this happens, if you're back to doing the bare minimum and back to just being your sole trader firefighting self, what is it that you will be able to fit in that will make you stand out from your competitors? What resource will you have to leverage what you do to ensure that your existing customers stay with you, when all it takes is someone else doing exactly the same as you to come along with a cheaper price and steal them away? Because when we go back to just doing the bare minimums and just managing to get by, we make it easy for people to steal our business. Often changing how you do things so you can maintain your edge is a better alternative to cost cutting, even though in the short term it does stretch you financially. A good part of my business is run virtually, with a heavy reliance on IT innovation for this reason. The thing that was for me so long a fear, because it was such a massive change to the structure of how I had things, has become a window to more opportunity than I could ever have conceived. But having said that, you know, let's talk about a few buying and cost-cutting things, you know, cost-cutting tips, for want of a better phrase, that we could employ. Ask trusted contacts for supplier referrals. Research and evaluate products or services in the marketplace that you're looking to buy, so that you know what's available, so you don't just go and pay for the first thing you see because it's what you know. Regularly evaluate providers, you know, evaluate their services, what pricing deals are out there, particularly with commodity supplies like utilities, telephone, broadband, mobile phones. It's a sad fact that often you get better deals as a new customer switching over than you do for being loyal. Maintain good relationships with suppliers. The better you know them, the better they know you, the better the service they give you, and the better able you are to tell them what you need. And so it gets easier for you to work together. And as that happens, it puts you in a position where you can negotiate better credit terms with them over time. And the next one, negotiate better credit terms. Do your best, even when things are hard, to pay on time. If there are prompt payment discounts, take advantage of them. Be very careful about premises and office space. Find the cheapest you can, but obviously not if you know you're going to outgrow it quickly. And then you've got the expense of having to move again unnecessarily and all the stress that goes with that. Maybe consider purchasing via bartering. It can be great for cash flow, but I don't believe it suits all type of business. So despite how it may be sold to you, be very clear as to, on an implementation basis, whether it truly could work for your business. Buy stock and materials to ensure that you can fulfill sales, but not so much that much needed cash is tied up and the stock is sitting in your warehouse or sitting in your stock room, or, you know, maybe you sell makeup, you've got too many lipsticks and everybody's bought red and you're stuck with your lovely purple lipstick. For those of you in restaurants, bars and pubs, this is a constant battle. Everybody was drinking whiskey last week. Now this week it's all alcohol pops and you're stuck with bottles of whiskey. But that in itself is a skill. Evaluate your staff or your team and be honest about the real contribution of each person. Get rid of those who are not performing or if they cause you headache. Life is too short. Now, if there is good reason for them not performing or doing your head in, then train them up. Often the fault does lie with us, particularly when we start to delegate things to people that formerly we did ourselves. Delegating is an art, and a lot of us just do it badly. And then when we get a bad result from the team member or the staff member, we blame them. But I still stress, you know, if they're just not performing or they really are giving you a hard time, get rid. Do not carry passengers. Of the thousands of profit and loss reports that I have produced over 20 years, staff costs are usually in the top three biggest company expenses. It's a lot of money in proportion to your overall expenses if you're paying that money out to people and you're getting nothing or little back. Another one, cut out unnecessary tax bills. Well, how do I do that, you say? I don't mean tax on profit, but taxation on trading activities like payroll and VAT. If you're paying penalties, you're wasting money. The amount of money lost from businesses in fines for not filing on time or filing inaccurate information on tax returns, VAT returns particularly, payroll, is staggering. Apart from poor cash flow in general, the primary reason for this is inadequate bookkeeping. Because if your bookkeeping is not very good, your tax returns aren't going to be very good, and your VAT returns certainly aren't. Can you actually afford it? When you're going to buy something, do you have the money? Are you borrowing for it? Are you taking it out on credit cards? If it requires you to borrow, can you wait for it so that you can buy it from disposable income rather than paying for it through creating debt? Credit control. This is not one of my favorites because it can be very soul destroying when you've done all the things before that I've said. You've got great lead generation, your sales process is just humming, you buy like a pro, you get the best materials for the lowest price, your credit terms are great, you send out your invoices, and then there's never any money. You look at your profit and loss. You look at your sales, let's just say, even if you just have a book with invoices. And there's all that money you could be spending, and it's just not coming in. How frustrating to go through all the work and achievement of getting that business, selling it, providing it, and then you still can't pay your bills because they're just not giving you your money. Even in businesses that have a lot of available cash reserves, this situation over time will eat into this and put the business at risk. Again, monitor your profit and loss as you go along. But there are fundamental things that you can do to stay out of control. There are just too many, because credit control, I truly believe, is a whole area in itself. But there are a few areas, as I say, that if you keep your eye on, could hopefully alleviate a lot of the problems that come with trying to get money out of customers. Number one, ensure you are making a profit. Because conversely, even if you're getting your money in on time, if there just isn't enough sales or profit in the business that you've done, you know, money's coming in, but you're still not able to cover anything. Two, as you know, again, raise your prices. Three, have a credit control policy in place. I hate to use the word policy again because it conjures up images of thick document with loads of clauses and points in it. But it just may be a few lines on an A4 piece of paper that outlines a basic procedure that you follow. And it could include things like, one, if you invoice your customers, send the invoices out promptly. Do not give credit unless you have to. Consider credit checking new customers if their non-payment causes such hardship because you're really tight on how much sales you have coming in. But, you know your business. Sometimes credit checking for customers that spend little bits of amount of money here and there is overkill, particularly if you're not going to give credit, really. Have clear and freely available terms and conditions. The best time to have terms and conditions is before you invoice them. But having it on the invoice is great as well. It's too late once you're chasing them for money to then only point them to your terms and conditions, because they can legitimately say, you never told me that before, and have a valid reason for why they're not paying your bill on top of the reason that they had to begin with. Watch out for new customers placing orders with you that are larger than average for a first-time order, and they want it in a hurry. They, in turn, could be on stop with another supplier, and they're just shifting to you. Again, if you have that kind of business and you do initial credit checks or you ask for references, it will alleviate this problem, but it won't eliminate it. So, you know your business, have your wits about you. Rather than put the amount of credit days on your invoice, within 7 days, within 30 days, within 60 days, put the date you want to be paid by. By putting 30, 60, 90, subliminally what that says is, your business accepts payment 30, 60, 90 days. So be careful of that. To be fair, it's something that I'm often guilty of doing, but I don't really send statements out because the way my business is set up, it's not generally necessary. But if you need to chase for payment over credit terms, it's just a thought. For big jobs or for new customers, take an initial deposit from them as a contingency and do not supply the full product or services until you know you will get paid, or until at least that deposit has been paid. In fact, if you haven't had the deposit, don't start the work, because that tells you something that you need to know. But when we're desperate for sales, we sometimes close our eyes to things that we know better about. And lastly, but not the only point, there are loads more, but the last one I'm going to touch on today, if appropriate and you can do it, take payment by standing order. Direct debit is out of the league of most of us, but look at regular payments. You can take credit cards, you can do this on a regular recurring payment via PayPal. There are many, many more things you can do, and if you're interested in setting up a credit control policy or you'd like help to merely put a few processes in place, then go to my website www.financialgymforbusiness.com and put a request in the contact form, and we're happy to come back to you and have a chat and see what we can do. A few more things to bear in mind when it looks at, inflow and outflow of cash is keep an eye on your service levels. Often, cash in is hampered by unhappy customers refusing to pay until something is resolved. If you think back to my mad example of buying the inferior materials and people suddenly ringing up with lots of complaints. It is better to solve the underlying problem than to keep giving refunds, credits, or lose a customer over a money dispute that could have been avoided. Track the cash and be aware of what you will need before it is due. If you know your rent is paid quarterly, then before that quarter payment is due, you need to know whether that money will be in the account before the payment is due to cover it. There's no point saying, oh, it's due today. Oh, we haven't got the money. You need to know. You need to anticipate. And if customers do owe you money, get it. Collect your money vigorously because you need it to pay bills. Otherwise, what you're effectively doing is giving interest-free credit. Well, my friends, it's time to say goodbye again for another audio session. Thank you for listening, and I hope there are some tips in there that you can use now or tomorrow. I'd love to see you in part 4 of the series. Please do come back. This is Georgette Rowland of the Financial Gym saying be good for others, but really, be good for yourself. Goodbye.